This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Chimera Jar by James E. Wisher, narrated by Joe Hempel. Teamwork. Conryu walked down the familiar hall to dark magic class with a mixture of relief and disappointment. Winter break had been a pleasant change of pace after months of magic studies, but he hadn't been able to avoid magic altogether. The business with the department remained fresh in his mind. Hopefully Mr. Kane would have the situation straightened out soon, if for no other reason than Maria was worried about him. Prime wriggled in his grip. The Scholomantic didn't like being carried and kept fidgeting in his hand. Right now Prime looked like nothing but an ugly green book. Conryu hid him between his notepad and Infernal Basics book. So far, he'd been able to keep Prime a secret from the other students, though he had no idea who Dean Blaine had told. Only Mrs. Umbra had asked to see the Scholomantic, and that had been a brief inspection conducted 10 minutes after he got back to school. She seemed neither impressed with Prime nor disappointed in Conryu for claiming him. That was about as good a reaction as he dared expect. Prime had strict instructions to remain silent except when they were in his room. And even then, Conryu wasn't allowed to study any of the many secrets the book held, except as applied to whatever his teachers had him working on. In addition to checking out Prime, Mrs. Umbra had said they'd turned the investigation into the Grand Brawl incident over to the department in Central. The only clue they'd found was a small fragment of necroplasma that had been made as hard as steel. It seemed the Viper Golem had been made of the stuff, but most of it dissolved when the demon escaped. He shuddered to think how many lives it took to create that much of the crud. "Conryu?" Kelsey jogged down the hall to catch up to him. He slowed, and she fell in step beside him. When he hadn't run into her on the train or in the dorm, Conryu feared she may have decided she didn't want to be friends after all. Her bright smile as she walked beside him argued otherwise. "How was your winter break?" he asked.
"I survived. You?"
"It was interesting." No reason to give her too many details, especially since he had no idea what he could and couldn't talk about. I did some field work with Maria's mom. You know, to get a taste of the business of magic. Can't say I'm much more interested in it now than I was.
I don't blame you. It seems like all my family talks about is business. I feel more like my mom's employee than her daughter sometimes.
That's harsh. Conryu opened the classroom door for her. The others turned to look when they entered. No one said anything, they just stared. It couldn't be just him. They had to be used to having a guy in the class by now. Maybe it was because he was hobnobbing with the rich and famous. He shook his head and took his seat at the back of the class. When Kelsey sat beside him instead of in her usual spot up front, Conryu raised an eyebrow.
"What? I can't sit beside my friend?"
"Sure you can. I was just surprised." The door burst open and Mrs. Lenore hustled through.
"Sorry, I got mixed up in something. Welcome back, everyone."
She set to drawing on the chalkboard. When she finished, there was a group of stick figures around a spell circle.
"So, for the second half of the year, we'll be focusing on group castings. Group castings allow individual wizards to combine their power to create more potent effects than they'd otherwise be able to. With each person added to the casting, it grows more complex. So we'll be limiting our groups to 5.
Mrs. Lenore wrote out 2 words in Infernal. Break and shatter.
We'll start working in pairs to create a combined breaking.
From behind her desk, she took out metallic spheres covered in runes.
These will be your practice targets. One member of the group will chant break to destroy the wards, while the other chants shatter to smash the orb. The spells protecting them are much more potent than those used in the wooden blocks we trained with earlier. Everyone pair up."
Before Conryu had a chance to look Kelsey's way, Mrs. Lenore continued.
"Conryu, you'll be working with me. For safety reasons, you understand."
Conryu sighed, nodded, and walked down to the front of the class to join her. While the girls were talking and sorting themselves out, Mrs. Lenore leaned close so no one could overhear.
"It won't do any good to pair you up with one of the girls until you can modulate your power enough to match a weaker partner. As it stands now, your power would do all the work, and she'd get nothing out of the experience."
"So what am I really going to do?"
"I'll explain once the girls have started.
The groups were soon set, and Mrs. Lenore watched them for a few minutes to make sure they were doing everything correctly. When she was satisfied, she rejoined Conryu in the front of the room.
So, you were saying? Right, modulation. You need to hold back enough of your power so you don't overwhelm your partners.
That sounds kind of pointless.
If the idea is to combine our powers to create a more potent effect, why would I use less than my full power? I mean, to match Kelsey, I'd have to use like 10% of my full strength, and the combined casting would amount to less than a quarter of what I could do on my own. How is that beneficial?
Her mouth opened and closed, but no words came out. She looked a bit like a fish caught on the beach. After a moment, she pulled herself together.
When you put it that way, it makes no sense at all. Combined casting is what I always teach during second semester. It never even occurred to me that it wouldn't work for you.
She slumped and fell silent. He glanced back at the girls, but they were all engrossed in their practice. He put a hand on her shoulder, and Mrs. Lenore looked up.
What are we going to do? If the final is all about combined casting, I guess I need to learn it.
She shook her head.
That's not really what it's about. It's just the breaking is of an order of magnitude stronger than what a single dark wizard can handle.
Conryu raised an eyebrow at that.
Okay, an ordinary dark wizard. Sometimes I don't even know why you're in my class. If you took the final today, you'd pass it with ease. For the sake of argument and the fact that we don't have enough people for only two groups, how could I work with weaker partners? We've established that lowering my own strength is useless. What could a second and third person do to make me stronger?
She sat on the edge of her desk and rubbed her temples.
I'm not sure. A standard circle casting wouldn't work. It's designed to unite wizards of similar strength. The problem is fusing the energy flows into a coherent whole.
When I helped Mrs. Umbra banish the demon serpent, she drew out my power and directed it with a spell of her own. Would something like that work?
If you had the death stick and 50 years of experience, sure.
Mrs. Lenore closed her eyes and sighed.
I don't know what to do. I'm a horrible teacher.
Don't say that. This is new for everyone. I have class with Mrs. Umbra later. Would you mind if I mentioned the problem to her? She might have a suggestion.
By all means. God knows you need someone other than me to help you.
Class ended, and everyone but Conryu left for their free period. The moment the last girl closed the door behind her, Prime shook the notepad off and flew in front of him.
That woman is incompetent. I should be overseeing your instruction.
Imagine, telling the most powerful wizard in the world that what he really needs to know is how to make himself weaker. Of all the stupid ideas I've heard over the millennia, that one's right up there with, let's call Lord Beelzebub Bug Eyes.
Don't be so critical. Mrs. Lenore's a good person. I'm afraid she's just a little out of her depth.
I didn't say she wasn't a good human. I said she's an idiot. If she'd given it even a moment of thought, she'd have realized her idea didn't even bear contemplation. The ominous tapping of Mrs. Umbra's death stick sent Prime flying back to hide under his notepad. The head of dark magic was the only person Prime seemed to fear. Not that Conryu blamed the Scholomantic. She certainly had an intimidating presence. Despite that, Conryu found he was eager to see her again. The door opened, and the short, wrinkled figure in black hobbled in.
Afternoon, Mrs. Umbra.
Conryu, I trust that ill-mannered book has been behaving itself.
Prime's been on his best behavior. I haven't told anyone about him yet. Is that the plan, or can I let others know?
Up to you. But until you learn to cast spells through it, the Scholomantic will be a point of vulnerability.
Is that what you're going to teach me?
He sat up straighter. Anything that eliminated a potential weakness was of interest to him.
Before I forget, I have a question.
She hobbled down and sat behind the desk.
Oh?
He briefly explained what had happened in his first class.
Anyway, it sounds like combination casting won't be of much use for me. I need to figure out some way to work with my classmates, if only for the final.
She nodded and tapped her chin.
Hey, book.
Prime flew up off the desk but didn't speak.
Do you have anything on fusion magic?
Conryu had never heard of such a thing, but Prime flipped his pages before finally stopping. On the open page was an image of three wizards standing in a triangle formation. The two in the back rested their hands on the one in front's shoulders, and the text described how to merge the three powers into one. It looked like exactly what he needed.
"Can I show this to Mrs. Lenore? She seemed really upset that she didn't know what to teach me."
"Let me see." Prime flew over to allow Mrs. Umbra to read the pages. After a minute, she nodded. "Very complete. That should solve your group casting problem. You have my permission to study those pages in your spare time, though don't experiment without one of your teachers present."
"Never crossed my mind."
Prime flew back and landed on the desk. Conryu patted his spine.
"Thanks."
The Scholomantic's pleasure flowed through their link.
"So what are we going to practice?"
"As you guessed, we're going to work on you sharing your spells with your book. Ordinarily, this isn't something we teach freshmen. Not much point, since you're technically not allowed to have a familiar until your second year. But in your case, we'll have to make an exception."
"That happens a lot, doesn't it?"
Conryu grinned.
"Yeah, but what can we do?"
"Indeed. Ready to begin?" He spent the next 2 hours trying to force a Cloak of Darkness spell to cover himself in Prime. After 20 castings, Conryu was exhausted, and the best he managed was a scattering of black spots so it looked like Prime had a fungus infection. "That's enough for now," Mrs. Umbra said. "Feel free to practice that as much as you like. By that I mean for at least an hour a day. We meet up again in 3 days. I expect you to be able to cover both yourself and the book in darkness." Conryu nodded and stood up.
"We'll get there."
Maria reached the top floor landing and made the short walk to the light magic classroom. She was eager to find out what they'd be working on this semester. She assumed healing, since along with warding, it was a light wizard's primary area of expertise. It would be nice to be able to have something concrete to offer Conryu. She told him she doubted she was strong enough to join him on his journey, but if she learned to heal, that would be something he couldn't do, even with all his power. That thought made her smile. It was nice to think that there was something magical Conryu couldn't accomplish. Inside the classroom, about 2/3 of the others had arrived and were sitting at their desks. Mrs. Illustrial was standing at the front of the class, looking especially stern with her face twisted in a deep scowl. She glared at Maria as she made her way to the desk she shared with Irene.
"What did you do to get on her bad side?" Irene asked.
"No idea. This is the first time I've seen her since midterms. Congratulations on passing, by the way."
"Thanks. You too. Shame about Corey."
"Yeah."
Maria hadn't seen the weakest member of their class since she arrived, but the girl had to be upset. If Maria was ever demoted to the lowest rungs of magical study, she'd have cried herself to sleep for weeks. Conryu probably would have done backflips, but the odds of him getting demoted were about as good as the sun not rising in the morning. The last of the class entered with seconds to spare and took their seats. Mrs. Illustrial tapped the chalkboard with her pointer and everyone fell silent.
"Thank you, ladies. For the rest of the year we will be working on healing."
There were murmurs and Maria did a mental fist pump.
Healing, just as she'd hoped.
Mrs. Illustrial cleared her throat.
"Before we begin, I want to discuss what happened at midterms. Especially the shameful display by Conryu Koda."
This time the mutters had an angry tone. Everyone had been embarrassed when Conryu had demolished their best work with no visible effort. Maria had been a little annoyed too, but considering the way most people treated him, she didn't blame Conryu for showing off a little. Besides, he claimed it was his teacher's idea.
"That sort of showboating has no place in our fine school. I complained to his teacher as well as Dean Blaine, but since he didn't break any rules, no punishment was levied. Mrs. Lenore even had the gall to note that a little humility would do me, that is, us, good."
Mrs. Illustrial started pacing as her face grew red.
"As though it were my fault that every year for the past 10 years her students haven't been strong enough to defeat my best students. Her bitterness was hardly attractive."
Looked like her teacher had a bruised ego. Talk about not attractive. When her classes first began, Maria had looked up to Mrs. Illustrial. Now she was starting to wonder.
"So," Mrs. Illustrial continued, As long as you are in my class, you will have no contact with Kanryu, and as little contact with the rest of the dark magic class as possible. We wouldn't want their negative attitudes rubbing off on you. Understood?
Maria heard nothing after the order to avoid Kanryu. It was ridiculous, and she had no right to tell them who they could hang out with after class. Mrs. Illustrial fixed her gaze on Maria.
I said, understood? No, ma'am. It is not understood. I'm not going to stop seeing my friend just because he upset you, and I doubt you have the authority to make me.
The muscle at Mrs. Illustrial's jaw bunched.
As your primary teacher, I have all the authority I need. You will avoid that boy even if I have to assign you to detention every free moment you have.
Maria glared back.
I wonder what Dean Blaine will have to say. This is not her concern. You will say nothing about it.
I won't mention your threats if you back off your order to avoid Kanryu.
The two women engaged in a staring match for half a minute before Mrs. Illustrial looked away.
Do what you want, but if you need extra help with healing, like you did with Ward's, I suggest you find someone else to ask.
Bitch!
At this point, Maria wouldn't have asked her for help if her life depended on it. It was going to be a long second half of the year. After an agreeable dinner with Maria, Kanryu headed back to his room. He needed to talk to Mrs. Lenore, but he wasn't sure if he should tell her about Prime. For the moment, he'd copy the pages on fusion magic and say Mrs. Umbra gave them to him, which was close enough to the truth. The moment he stepped into his room, the pixie swirled around his neck in wind form, then turned into a tiny girl and settled on his shoulder. Prime flew out of his grasp and snarled at the pixie. She pressed herself against his cheek and trembled.
Stop that, Prime. This is the first friend I made when I arrived, and I'll not have you scaring her. You two are going to have to learn to get along.
The pixie flew up near the ceiling and stuck her tongue out at Prime. The Skullamantic rushed toward her, but Kanryu snatched him out of the air.
Enough.
Open up to that page about fusion magic so I can copy it. Prime glared once more at the pixie and landed on his desk, open to the page he needed. It took the better part of an hour for him to copy the three pages of Infernal along with the images. His drawings weren't as nice as the originals, but they got the idea across. Satisfied with his efforts, Kanryu stood up and headed for the door. He paused when he reached for the handle and turned back.
I trust you two will behave yourselves while I'm gone.
Prime slammed himself shut on the table while the pixie transformed into wind and blew out of his room. So much the better if they weren't in there alone. Kanryu stepped out into the hall and shut the door. It was like trying to keep a pair of angry feral cats apart with those two. They'd only known each other for a day and already seemed to hate one another. Didn't he have enough to worry about? He put that minor annoyance aside and headed toward Mrs. Lenore's room. It was convenient for him that his teacher was also the dark magic dorm supervisor. He had the center room, so no one could claim she played favorites by being closer to one side or the other. He had a hard time imagining that was an issue. But then again, he'd heard of stupider things. Kanryu knocked, and a moment later, Mrs. Lenore opened the door. She traded her black robes for soft pink pajamas that draped over a slim but still curvy figure. He was so surprised he took a step back. Mrs. Lenore slammed the door in his face. A few seconds later, it opened again, and she'd thrown her robe over the pajamas. Her cheeks were bright red, and she refused to meet his gaze.
Kanryu, can I help you with something?
Probably best not to mention the PJs.
Yeah, Mrs. Umbra had an idea about the combination magic thing. Is this a good time to talk?
Of course. Come in.
She stepped aside and he went in. Her room was identical to his, except for some extra decorations. A pair of pink bunny slippers that were a perfect match for the pajamas peeked out from under the bed. He couldn't restrain a smile. Mrs. Lenore noticed where he was looking, hurried over and kicked the slippers out of sight.
What did she have to say?
Right, Kanryu handed her his copied notes. She thought fusion magic might be the solution to our problem.
She'd barely started looking at the pages when something whistled in the bathroom.
Damn it, my tea.
I'll get it.
He started for the bathroom door.
No!
She stumbled in her rush to block him. Conryu didn't know what to do when Mrs. Lenore fell right towards him, and in his moment of hesitation their feet tangled up and they ended up in a heap on the floor. She lifted her head up out of his crotch and offered a shaky smile.
This isn't going very well, is it?
Not very.
Why don't I sit on the bed and when you're ready we can talk?
That's an excellent idea.
They separated and regained a modest amount of decorum. Conryu sat on the edge of the bed while Mrs. Lenore disappeared into the bathroom to deal with the whistling teapot. Why there was a whistling teapot in her bathroom was a subject he didn't want to explore. A short while later, she emerged with a steaming mug.
I'd offer you a drink, but I only have the one cup.
That's fine. I don't like tea anyway.
So, about fusion magic, do you think that would work?
She sat beside him and spread out the pages he brought.
I won't lie, I'm not at all familiar with this sort of magic. I've never taught it or even seen it performed. I'm not saying it wouldn't work, but the ritual is so far outside my area of expertise.
She shrugged.
That's cool. Like you said, I can probably do the final on my own. I was just thinking, since we don't have the right number of girls for 5-member teams, this might be a way for the 2 odd ones out to work with me. Maybe it would be best to go with 6-person teams and me alone.
No, it won't be.
She scrubbed a hand over her face.
6 is too many for such inexperienced wizards. Some of the girls might have the skill to pull it off. I think I might go with 1 group of 6 and 1 of 5. But that still leaves 1 girl out.
I think Kelsey would be willing to work with me on the fusion magic. What do you say I ask her, and if she says yes, we give it a try?
Can I keep these notes? If it's not too complex, I should be able to figure it out in short order. At least enough to help you two. Make sure you tell her she'll have to learn circle casting along with fusion magic, so it'll be extra work.
Will do. Thanks.
I'll go try and hunt up Kelsey.
Conryu started for the door, then turned back.
By the way, those are cool slippers.
Mrs. Lenore pointed at the door, but the hint of a smile played around her lips. Kelsey didn't have a room of her own. She stayed in a group room with the other freshman girls on the opposite end of the floor from his suite. This could be awkward if all 12 of his classmates were around. Well, there was nothing for it. He left Mrs. Lenore's room and made the short walk down to the... barracks? That didn't seem like the right word. Quarters, maybe? He sighed and quit trying to distract himself. Going to the girls' room was perfectly innocent and nothing to be concerned about. Conryu gathered himself outside the door and knocked. A minute later, a glowering blonde who never introduced herself to him opened the door. At least she still had her robe on.
What?
I was looking for Kelsey.
Why?
He was half a breath from telling her it was none of her business when Kelsey rushed up to the door.
Conryu, this is a surprise. What brings you here so late?
He was pretty sure it wasn't that late, but that was beside the point.
I have a proposition for you. Got a minute?
Sure, we were just practicing circle casting. Let's take a walk.
They left the still frowning blonde behind and headed back toward his room. He didn't say anything until they were halfway there.
So I was talking to Mrs. Lenore, and we've come up with an idea that will let me team up with someone for the final. It's called fusion casting.
Never heard of it.
Conryu held his door open for her, then closed it behind them.
Basically, it does just what it sounds like. One person fuses their power to another's to create a more powerful whole. I haven't gotten too heavily into the details yet. But if you're interested, I thought we might team up for the final.
Absolutely.
Her enthusiasm surprised him for half a second before she added,
If I team up with you, there's no way I can fail.
Before you get too excited, I have to tell you that you'll also have to study circle casting. This will make extra work for you.
She waved a hand.
That's fine. One of the things my mom taught me is how to spot a sure thing. You and anything to do with dark magic is a sure thing. I'm in.
Cool. I'll tell Mrs. Lenore and we can figure out a practice schedule.
Sunday at school. The rest of the first week went by in a hurry. He divided his time between practicing with Prime and with Kelsey. He could now cover both himself and the Scholomantic in a cloak of darkness. Mrs. Umbra had them working on a calling spell that would bring Prime to him through a dark portal if they were separated. That trick made the Cloak of Darkness seem like child's play. When his day off finally arrived, it had been a total relief until he remembered he had to visit Angus. Now Conryu found himself approaching the door to the office where they stuck the professor during his visits. The halls were silent in this part of the school, especially on a Sunday. The office was a little space, barely big enough for the professor and his desk, much less a spare chair and Conryu. It smelled faintly of ammonia and was the opposite end of the floor from the administrative area. He secretly suspected the so-called office was actually a converted storage closet. Not that he blamed the staff for sticking Angus in a hole in the wall as far from them as they could manage without putting him outside. The door was open, and Conryu poked his head in. "Any news?" Angus looked up from the book he'd been reading.
"Nothing from Chief Kane."
"Cool. See you next week."
"Please, can't you give me just a minute of your time?"
The professor sounded so depressed, Conryu stepped into the room.
"What is it?"
"Is there nothing I can say to impress upon you how important it is for your story to be told?"
"You don't care about my story. You talk about how you're this big expert, but you don't know shit about wizards, male or female. All you have is a stupid theory that I had the misfortune to prove partially possible, and now you've latched on to me like a tapeworm in hopes of making a buck and getting your good name back."
Conryu was panting and his face burned. He shouldn't have said anything, but he'd been wanting to get that off his chest for a while.
"Do you really believe that?"
Angus sounded genuinely hurt. "Is there some reason I shouldn't?"
"Come on and sit down."
Angus sounded as old as he looked.
"Maybe I should tell you my story."
Conryu hesitated, then went in. Stupid curiosity. He should just leave, but now he had to know. He squeezed himself into the tiny room and sat on the little plastic chair.
"When I was a boy in Scotland, I wasn't the strongest or healthiest, so I spent most of my time at the little library in our village. I think I was 12 when I stumbled on a story about Arthur and Merlin. The wizard fascinated me, haunted me even. I read everything I could find about him, and when I ran out of books, I went online and did more research. Everything about him was labeled fiction. But I wondered..."
"Wondered what?"
"If everyone knew male wizards were impossible, why did someone bother to make up such a character, even for a work of fiction? And it wasn't just Merlin. Many other books featured a male wizard as a character. Why, if it was impossible? I couldn't stop pondering the question. I devoted my life to trying to tease out the answer, and I came to one inescapable conclusion. All the male wizards, of which Merlin was the first, were patterned after a real person. I based my efforts around the premise and was roundly mocked, even losing my professorship over it. Then you come along and prove that my theory isn't impossible."
"Lucky me."
"No, lucky me. Don't you understand? If I can figure out how you came to be, it might prove the rest of my theory, that Merlin's spirit lingered after death and influenced your birth. I don't know how to prove it, but I have to."
Angus's eyes almost glowed with strength of his obsession. Conryu got up and shook his head. "That's a great story, but your fantasy doesn't interest me. I'm stuck being a wizard. I've made peace with that, more or less. What I'm not willing to be is a research subject. All the teachers already send weekly updates to the department. I suppose I can be grateful they didn't want to dissect me. I'd thank them for that, but I don't want to give them any ideas. I need to go." He stood up and headed out, leaving the silently staring professor behind. Conryu stalked through the quiet halls in a foul mood. How dare the professor expect him to validate a theory he didn't believe in or understand? The old man's obsession was his problem, not Conryu's. He badly wanted to punch something, but knocking a hole in the wall wouldn't do any good. He looked around again, but found himself alone in the hall. He took a deep breath and did the first movement of the most basic kata. He worked his way through it, remembering his father's advice and letting the anger flow out of him with each breath. Angus and his crazy ideas were beyond his influence. just like having to come to this school was beyond his influence. As his body moved through the familiar forms, he came to understand what really made him angry wasn't Angus, but his lack of control, the world's complete indifference to what he wanted. Once the reason became clear, the tension melted away. Instead of fighting, he needed to accept his situation. His anger wouldn't change anything. He needed to forget about the future and focus on the moment. If circumstances required him to learn to be a wizard, he'd be the best damn wizard they'd ever seen. After he graduated, he could put that all aside and do what he wanted. No one would have any claim on him beyond those he allowed. He finished the last movement and sighed, his mind clear and focused for maybe the first time since he arrived at this school. He continued down the hall at a quick walk. Maria was probably wondering where he was. His meetings with Angus usually only lasted a minute or two. He found her pacing in the entryway, arms crossed and scowling. "Sorry I'm late." He leapt down the last four steps. She stopped and turned to face him. "What took you so long?" "Angus wanted to tell me his life story, and like an idiot, I agreed to listen. Kind of pitiful, actually." "So do you know what the dark magic final will be yet?" "Circle casting. Not for me, though. Naturally, my power doesn't allow me to do the same thing as the rest of the people in my class. I have to do something called fusion magic. Kelsey and I are teaming up for the final."
"You and Kelsey, huh?"
"Yeah."
"Remember, no getting jealous."
"So what about your final?"
"The whole second semester is focused on healing, with the final being the construction of a healing ward around a badly injured animal. If it lives, we pass. Otherwise, we fail."
"Ouch. Poor critter."
She swatted him on the arm.
"Hey, I didn't mean yours, but I wouldn't want to be stuck with the girl that failed the midterm."
"Don't worry. Corey's not going to have to take the final. Once she failed the midterm, she was downgraded to basic instruction only. All she'll learn from now on are the simplest universal spells with no further testing."
"Jeez, that's rough."
"Yeah, but the theory is if she can't manage the first-year midterm, then she doesn't have much hope of learning more advanced techniques. There were 7 other girls from the remaining classes that got downgraded with her, so at least Corey isn't on her own."
Maria cocked her head as if listening to something he couldn't hear.
"I'm late for alchemy. See you for dinner?"
"You bet."
She kissed him on the cheek and trotted off. One of the older students must have sent a wind spirit to fetch her. Conryu watched her until she was out of sight, enjoying the hints of her figure visible under the flowing white robe. He stretched and yawned. He hadn't spoken to Sonia or the other girls from the Golem Club, so he had no idea if they were still planning to meet up. He headed for the door. The easiest thing would be to go over and find out for himself. If they were there, great. If not, well, he'd deal with that when he had to. They needed to make the robes thicker, or maybe add a fur liner in the winter. Conryu shivered as he quick-stepped down a narrow path through the snowy grounds toward the club's workshop. On days like this, he especially missed home. Being right on the ocean, Sentinel City never got this cold. Hopefully, Sonya would have the shed all heated up when he arrived.
"Do you ever get cold?"
He had Prime tucked under one arm like a football.
"No, Master. Demons are much more durable than mortals. Only magical cold causes me any discomfort."
"Lucky you." As he walked, he kept his head on a swivel. Everyone was holed up inside where it was warm, so if someone wanted to try something, this would be an ideal time. He hadn't been attacked in months, not that he was complaining, but he also doubted the people that wanted him dead had simply given up. Every day that went by without an event made him even more nervous.
Shit.
The shed was closed up tight. No steam rose from the roof, and no tracks marred the snow in front of the door. Where was everyone? He scratched his head and began to retrace his steps. Why had he imagined anyone would be there in the first place? The brawl had come and gone, so they didn't really have anything to work towards. Maybe he'd been foolish to think someone would let him know, but he found it annoying all the same. He had only gone a few paces when an explosion shook the ground. It wasn't coming from nearby, and he dismissed the notion of an attack at once. A second, larger blast caused the snow to fall from some nearby trees.
Reveal.
He scanned the area and soon spotted magical energy coming from down by the lake. All the elements were represented. Curiosity and cold warred within him before curiosity won. He jogs toward the lake, and several hundred yards later, the trees opened up, revealing a gathering of several hundred students. Kanryu paused at what he considered a safe distance and watched the proceedings. A girl in blue-green robes stood at the edge of the lake and waved her hands. He was too far away to make out what she was saying, but soon a dragon made of water rose up out of the lake. Another girl, this one in black, assumed the position for dispel. A black orb shot out and struck the dragon. Another boom sounded as the mass of water splashed down in the lake. He didn't know what sort of test they were taking, and he didn't especially care. Kanryu rushed back to the dorm and went down to his room. Inside, it was nice and warm. A hot, dry breeze swirled around him, driving the cold out. When he was nice and toasty, the pixie settled on his shoulder. Prime flew over and landed on his desk, apparently too cold to even muster a growl for the little wind spirit. So much for the durability of demons. What was he supposed to do now? He could practice summoning Prime, but he'd been looking forward to a break from magic. He turned to look at the pixie, who smiled at him. "Do you know Sonya Chard? She's a senior, fire wizard, came to visit me a few weeks back." She hung her head and gave it a shake. A moment later, she perked up and whistled something in the piping language of the wind. Kanryu sighed. "I don't understand." She stared at him for a handful of seconds, then turned into a breeze and blew out the door. Maybe he offended her. "Pixies are flighty creatures." Prime flew up off the desk. A random thought probably popped into her empty little head, and she flitted off to explore it. "Why do you dislike her so much? As far as I can tell, she's an absolute sweetheart, yet you've done nothing but growl and snap at her since we got here." Prime flexed his cover in what Kanryu had come to recognize as his approximation of a human shrug. "I'm a demon." He said it like that was the only explanation required. "Would you care to elaborate?" "Demons and other spirits have never gotten along. Just being in their presence makes my pages crawl. I can barely tolerate the wind spirit and the water spirit peeking at us from the bathroom." Kanryu turned his head just in time to catch a glimpse of the naiad vanishing out of the doorway. "But only because you command it, Master. To put it simply, demons do not play well with others." "Great." The pixie blew back in and turned into a girl. She grabbed his robe and tugged him toward the door. He started to ask what she was doing before he remembered he wouldn't understand even if she told him. Kanryu held out his hand and Prime flew into it, shifting as he went so he resembled an especially ugly leather-bound book. "I'm coming." He followed her up and out of the basement, down the long hall to the cafeteria. Sonya sat by herself in an ill-lit corner, a bag of vanilla cookies on the table in front of her. She nibbled one with a distant look on her face. "You found her for me. Thanks." The pixie rubbed her cheek against his and blew away. Now he had to figure out why Sonya looked so depressed. Kanryu had always favored the direct approach, so he walked over, laid Prime on the table, and sat across from her. "Hey." Sonya looked up at him. She had dark ridges under her eyes. "Go away." He grabbed the bag of cookies out from under her nose. "Can't do that. There's a new rule. Depressed people aren't allowed to eat cookies, and just brings the rest of us down and insults the cookies." He grabbed one and popped it in his mouth. It was dry, bland, and way too sweet. Why on earth did she favor the nasty things? "I refuse to be cheered up. Now give me my cookies and leave me alone." "At the very least, you owe me an explanation. I half froze on my way out to the shed, and when I arrived, instead of my favorite fire wizard, I find a closed door and not so much as a note." She reached for the cookies, but he pulled them further back. "If you're a good girl and tell me why the only club that would let me join is disbanded, I'll let you have one." "There's no point in meeting anymore. The brawl's over, and I'm graduating this summer. I'm sorry I forgot to tell you." "So, what, you're going to spend the rest of your Sundays alone in the cafeteria, moping and eating cookies?" "That was my plan." "Fine. But if we're going to mope, we are going to do it properly." "Just a minute." Kanryu went over to the kitchen and bought a pair of ice cream cups and grabbed two spoons. He opened one and set it in front of Sonya. "There. According to my mom, you can't have a proper mope without ice cream. Now, do you want to eat in silence, or do you want to tell me about it?" Sonya grabbed a cookie, nibbled it, and blew out a sigh.
It's my family. They want me to come work for them as soon as I graduate. I love my parents, but I really don't want to work at the factory.
Did you tell them? Kanryu took a bite of ice cream, much better than the cookies.
No. They were so excited about me joining the company, I didn't have the heart. I don't know what to do. If I tell them I want to work with them, I'll be miserable. And if I tell them I don't, I'll feel like a shitheel. It's your classic no-win situation.
Sounded like Sonya had the same problem as Kelsey. Did anyone have a good relationship with their parents besides Kanryu and Maria? Do you get along with your parents?
Oh, yeah, they're great. A little workaholic, maybe. But otherwise great. I never planned on working with them, you know? I was just going to go into engineering. But senior year I passed the wizard's test with a decent score, and they immediately began planning how I could help out. It was like they forgot I had other plans.
Kanryu smiled, thinking of his own plans, now on hold. A burst of inspiration struck.
You ever think about building a motorcycle with an engine that runs on magic?
She stared at him.
Why would anyone build an engine that ran on magic? A gas engine is much simpler.
Just to see if it was possible. You need earth magic to make the parts move. Water magic for lubrication.
No, earth magic would handle that as well. Oil comes from the earth, after all. You could use fire magic for extra thrust and wind magic to keep the bugs out of your teeth.
What about something for safety? He took another bite of his ice cream and struggled not to smile.
The wind bubble could probably handle that, too.
She dropped her cookie and frowned at him.
I know what you're trying to do and it won't work. I'm determined to be miserable.
Right. Do you think fire magic in the combustion chamber would work better than earth magic to power the engine? The discussion lasted for another hour, and by the end he doubted he could have kept Sonya from trying to build a magic engine even if he wanted to.
Do you think Crystal, Onyx, and Jade would be interested in working on it?
Crystal, for sure, as long as she doesn't make the academy team. The others were pretty pissed when I closed up shop, so they may have moved on.
Wait, the academy team? You mean the Four Nations tournament?
Yeah, they're holding tryouts today down by the lake. Crystal wanted to give it a shot, but I don't think she can beat the Earth Magic Wizard from last year's team. Crystal will be a senior next year, and the current girl will have graduated, so she should have a good chance if she wants to try again.
Why didn't you try out?
Kanryu asked.
You're pretty strong in fire magic.
One of the girls in my grade is way stronger than me, and she's trying out. I'd have no chance against her.
Oh, well, we'll just have to focus on the engine. I can handle the repairs if you two take care of the magic. It shouldn't be hard to lay my hands on a motor and tools.
Shall we get started next week?
Might as well. We're out of cookies and ice cream.
She jumped up, ran around the table, and hugged him.
Thanks. This should be fun.
He grinned, thrilled at the prospect of working on a motor again, and even more thrilled to see Sonya back to her usual self. Lady Mockingbird's heels clicked on the stairs as she led her four strongest girls down to the basement casting chamber. She'd spent her every free moment the past week poring over the research notes taken from the Kincaid's lab. She'd never admit it, but some of the magical theory was way over her head, and she considered herself well-read when it came to advanced wizardry. Nevertheless, she felt confident that she understood the process sufficiently to begin the summoning and binding portion of the project. She would, however, be taking all necessary precautions, thus the line of girls following with bowed heads. At the bottom of the steps, she turned left and entered the austere casting chamber. Everything had been removed, even her full-length scrying mirror, to be certain no stray magic would interfere with her casting, and to protect the valuable item from out-of-control spirits. Following the directions in the lab notes, she'd spent hours after her classes inscribing a spell circle. The complex mix of runes intertwined and covered most of the floor. She had to be careful not to stare, as the runes had a tendency to twist and writhe in her vision, filling her with nausea and a hint of vertigo.
"Places, ladies."
She'd gone over the project often enough that the four girls hurried to the four corners of the room and settled in to await her next command. Lady Mockingbird stepped to the center of the circle and placed the jar at her feet before tiptoeing back, careful not to disturb any of her delicate runes. She would start with fire, as that was her strongest element. She threw her hands up and to the sides, a dramatic and unnecessary gesture, but one that pleased her nonetheless. This was a moment to savor, the moment when Kanryu Koda's life ended, and her ascension to Hierarch became a reality.
Begin.
The girls chanted the same spell, each in the language of their aligned element. Lines of energy climbed the walls and ceiling. Red, white, brown and blue intertwined and fused, creating a massive protective barrier around the chamber. When all the lines had appeared and the girls had fallen into a monotonous, sustained chant, Lady Mockingbird began her summoning.
From the hottest realm I call you, Child of Fire. Appear and serve a loyal ally of flame. Fire summoning.
The power built slowly as the heat in the room rose. Sweat drenched her body, running down her back and legs and soaking her red robe. She ignored all the distractions, focusing on her will and desire. A flaming gate appeared in the middle of the chamber directly above the jar. She called the name of a spirit well known to her.
Azoth Blazewing.
It was a shame to sacrifice such a valuable servant, but she wanted to be certain her first summoning went smoothly, and the Blazewing was of sufficient power for her needs. The flames shifted and swirled before a shining, translucent wing emerged, followed by a second. The moment they cleared the flames, the wings beat so fast they became a blur. Wind rushed around Lady Mockingbird, drying the sweat for a moment. A dragonfly as long as she was tall pulled itself free of the portal. The moment the blaze wing cleared the gate, she collapsed it. The giant flaming insect zipped around the room a couple times before hovering in front of Lady Mockingbird. She crooned to it in the language of fire, soothing the spirit's distress. With gentle coaxing, she positioned it directly above the chimera jar. She offered it a gentle smile and spoke the activation phrase for the artifact.
Make many into one.
Black tentacles shot up out of the mouth of the jar and dragged the Blazewing down. It buzzed and spat flames, all to no avail. A minute later it was gone, and the temperature of the room had dropped back to normal. Lady Mockingbird wiped her brow. One down, three to go.
Take five, ladies.
The students fell silent and slumped against the wall. They'd done well. None of her girls had faltered when the Blazewing appeared, nor had they fumbled a single word during the lengthy summoning. She expected no less, but was still pleased that they met her high standards. 10 minutes later, when the girls had caught their breaths and her strength had returned enough to resume, Lady Mockingbird clapped her hands.
Positions!
They all scrambled up and restored the wards. When they'd fallen into a comfortable rhythm, she chanted in the language of Earth. It was essentially the same spell, only in a different language. As a fire wizard, Lady Mockingbird knew far fewer earth spirits than she did fire, but one whose name she'd found in her research should closely match the Blazewing in power. The lab notes had been very definite that all four spirits used in the Chimera had to be of like power. That was why she used the Blazewing instead of one of the more powerful fire spirits she'd met over the years. The floor rumbled as the spell reached its conclusion, and the earth portal opened. She called the name of the spirit.
Prima Basilisk.
A moment later, the knobby, horned head of the basilisk emerged from the gate. It dragged itself into the chamber using 8 heavily muscled legs that ended in talons as long as her forearm. The basilisk turned its yellow gaze on Lady Mockingbird and loosed a roar that shook the chamber. She ended the spell, closing the gate and trapping the earth lizard in their reality. Unlike the Blazewing, the basilisk didn't look on her with a gentle expression. Though earth and fire got along most of the time, summoning the beast into the close confines of the casting chamber put the basilisk on its guard, and her at a disadvantage. She couldn't give it time to attack. It had appeared close enough to the jar that she risked speaking the activation phrase. The tentacles shot out again, and the ends flailed against the basilisk's pebbly hide.
Damn it. The earth spirit was just out of range.
Lady Mockingbird raised a hand.
Burn my enemies to ash. Flame blast.
A jet of fire streaked toward the basilisk. Her spell splashed against its tough skin, but instead of driving it closer to the jar, it only enraged the beast. The basilisk roared, lowered its head, and charged toward the wall.
The house trembled, but the wards held. Many more blows like that and the building wouldn't survive. Even from a distance, the tension on the face of the girl protecting that wall was clear. One more solid hit would knock her out. Lady Mockingbird chanted another spell.
Flames of protection.
A wall of flames shot up between the basilisk and the wall it had just struck. The beast shook its head and turned toward her. It wasn't the brightest creature in existence, but it had just enough intelligence to recognize her as the source of its problems. It snarled and charged right at her. Its crest horn looked far bigger when it was pointed right at her chest. A quick wind spell empowered her leap and carried her over the beast's back. She whistled once in midair to adjust her trajectory, avoiding the flailing tentacles and coming to a safe landing on the opposite side of the jar. The basilisk slammed full speed into the wall behind her last position, shaking the building and making the wards tremble. If she couldn't force it into the jar soon, she'd have to send it back to its home dimension or risk losing the building. It turned to face her, and she dared hope it might be stupid enough to charge right through the tentacles in its rage to reach her. That hope was thwarted when it stalked to the left, keeping well away from the jar. At least it hadn't decided to attack one of the girls. If even one of them lost her focus, the wards would collapse, allowing the basilisk to smash its way out with ease. The basilisk didn't have the right sort of magic to read her mind, but as it passed one of the girls, its tail lashed out. The casual blow couldn't penetrate the barrier, but it startled the young wizard enough that she stammered through a portion of the chant. The line of energy fluctuated and collapsed. Dumb though it was, the basilisk was still a magical creature. Its head perked up the moment the wards collapsed. It was no use. Lady Mockingbird chanted the portal spell again, this time opening it right under the beast's many feet. It fell through the opening and back into its own realm. She sealed the gate, not giving it a chance to climb back out. Another quick incantation deactivated the jar. Though she hated to admit it, even to herself, Lady Mockingbird was going to need some help if she wanted to secure the remaining spirits required to complete the chimera. Sentinel Search. Tara slowly coaxed the residual energy out of the open box and away from the blob of necroplasma. She turned off every light save one in the casting chamber to minimize distractions. She'd been fiddling with the ugly blob since Kanryu opened the box for them. Every trick she'd tried failed to coax it to do anything but slam itself over and over again into the containment circle. She'd finally given up and returned to her original plan of determining the purpose of the artifact once contained in the box. The cloud of dark energy rose above the blob, and when it was high enough, she opened a small gap in the containment field and brought it out. She breathed a sigh of relief when the energy cleared the opening and the field had resealed. Though she had absolutely no experience dealing with necroplasma, Tara didn't want her first effort to be chasing the mad blob all over her casting chamber. Now that she didn't have to divide her focus, Tara used wisps of dark energy to nudge the cloud of energy into its former shape, using the fragmented lines running through it as a guide. It was a tedious task, combining optimism and guesswork. Hours passed, or so she assumed from the stiffness in her back, but at last the final line fell into place. Her heart skipped a beat when she recognized what the spell did. The five artifacts would tap into the power of the floating island to open multiple portals to the netherworld to summon God knew how many shadow beasts into the city. If it worked, tens of thousands might die. At least now she knew why nothing had happened since the battle with the bikers and the theft of their bodies. Mercia couldn't trigger the summoning until the island returned this summer. That was their one advantage. If they somehow located and destroyed the boxes before the island returned, Mercia's plan would fail. If even one remained, she could still summon dozens of monsters capable of killing scores or more people. That was beyond contemplation. The cloud of energy dissipated, and she switched the lights back on. The blob appeared less energetic when she left the room fully lit. She strode out of the chamber and down the hall to Lin's office. Hopefully he'd finished mapping the potential hiding places. She paused outside the unmarked door, knocked once, adjusted her hair and robe, and pushed it open. Lin sat behind his desk, hunched over a cheap laptop, the pile of notes beside him. He looked up and smiled.
"Hey, any progress?"
"Some.
She told him what she'd discovered, and when she finished, Lin stared at her, his mouth hanging open.
You're saying she could summon hundreds of creatures like those things that attacked Kanryu? How would we even begin to deal with something like that?
If it happens, all the wizards in the city wouldn't be enough to stop every shadow beast before it killed someone. We need to handle this before the island returns. Have you finished mapping all the potential hiding spots?
All the ones the computer and I could come up with.
He typed a command, and an aerial map of the city appeared on the screen. Hundreds of little red dots littered it.
Can you overlay the path of the floating island?
Another command produced a wide gray path over the city.
You can eliminate anything outside of that swath.
Dozens of little dots vanished, leaving far too many behind. Lin hung his head.
That's still a hell of a lot of spots to check.
She'll want to open the portals in the most densely populated part of the city, so you can eliminate everything outside the city center.
Okay, that leaves around 60 left to check. That's a lot, but manageable.
If we deploy the city police, we should be able to clear the lot of them in a week. Tara shook her head.
We'll need to send wizards. Mircea will have hidden the boxes behind illusions and magical defenses.
If you send regular cops and they trigger a trap...
No. That might be almost as bad as a portal opening.
So, you and me, maybe Claire and the security guy, Adam, right? If we can coax the police into loaning us the department wizard, she could check a few locations.
That should work. Once we find one box, I can calculate the approximate location of the other four.
I'll round up Claire. You call your former boss. We'll meet downstairs in an hour. Oh, and be sure to print out a list of all the addresses. Lin guided the car through the early afternoon traffic. After months of frustration, they were finally close to cracking the case. In the time since his reassignment, he'd had more than a few doubts about whether they'd ever make any progress, or if Mircea was too clever for them. He never should have doubted Tara. That woman had determination to spare. Though if he never had to look at that list of descriptions again, that would be okay. Beside him, Tara stared out the window. They were still a ways from the park where they hoped to find the first box, so he doubted she'd detect anything. Maybe she was mentally preparing herself for whatever they'd have to deal with. Lin felt far out of his depth most days at his new job. Sometimes it came as a relief that they'd just stuck him in an office with his packet of clues. If he'd had to comment on some magical matter, he'd have sounded like an idiot. The light turned red, forcing him to ease to a stop. He glanced at Tara again. She seemed to be in her own world. He enjoyed the profile of her face and neck for a moment, then said,
"What's on your mind?"
She jumped as though she'd forgotten he was there.
"I was thinking about the warehouse and what sort of trouble we might find when we track down the rest of the boxes."
Lin grimaced. It had been a near thing last summer when he accidentally triggered magic protecting the box they recovered. Only Terra's power had allowed them to escape with their lives, though she'd paid a high price for the effort.
"Maybe it won't be that bad."
Wishful thinking. Mircea has had months to prepare her defenses, and unlike the first one we found, these boxes still have their artifacts inside.
"No. If all we encounter is a swarm of shadow ravens, I'll consider us lucky indeed."
Lin tried to think of something encouraging, but the light changed, forcing him to focus on the road. That was probably just as well. Only inane words of encouragement came to mind, and she'd see right through them. 5 minutes later, he pulled into a space beside the park. It was only half-hour parking, but his government plate should keep them from getting a ticket. He waited for a break in the traffic, climbed out, and joined Tara on the sidewalk. The park only covered 4 blocks, and according to his research, had a single fountain. If the information the biker left was accurate, then the box had to be near it.
"What should I do?"
Tara took her magic-enhancing glasses from a pocket of her gray robe and slid them on.
"Just keep your eyes peeled and don't touch anything."
He laughed.
"Don't worry. I learned my lesson."
The air was bitter as they walked down the path toward the fountain. The bare branches of the trees cast a spider web of shadows across the trail. Lin was glad he had on his heavy wool jacket. He assumed Tara used some sort of magic to keep the air around her warm, as her robe seemed far too thin for this weather. One advantage of the cold, it kept all the people inside and out of their way. If this went sideways, the fewer people around, the better. Tara muttered under her breath as they walked,
her gaze flicking back and forth. He doubted they'd find anything this far from the fountain, but she appeared to be taking no chances. They spent the better part of 10 minutes at their deliberate pace to reach the center of the park. Some kids